Track 1, Duke Street. When Aberdare celebrated the dawn of the 1800s, there was an air of optimism in the small agricultural village. Investment in road and canal was well underway, and the iron industry was offering increased employment opportunities, with good pay too. The Industrial Revolution had come to town. Within 50 years, the narrow canal was choked to capacity as iron and then coal poured out of the hillsides to be shipped around the world. In order to keep up with demand, a modern transport solution was sought. It came in the shape of the Taff Vale Railway, or TVR, in 1846. On this section, Isambard Kingdom Brunel was not responsible for its construction, as Cynon Valley History Society member Jeff Evans explains.
The line was originally called the Aberdare Railway, and it was set up by some local businessmen for profit. And immediately it was opened, it was leased to the Taff Vale Railway in perpetuity.
For more than 100 years, a procession of trains delivered goods to the market or hauled coal and iron to the coast. The scene in front of you would have been filled with activity and noise, dust and steam. Today, it is buses that draw up alongside the former station alongside Duke Street.
The TVR railway was generally known as the low level because at a somewhat higher level was the point at which the other line arrived, and hence that was called the high level station, which is where the station is in Aberdare today, incidentally.
David Leslie Davis is the chairman of the Cynon Valley History Society.
And that was the terminus for the Vale of Neath Railway, or the VNR, and that linked Aberdare, as it were, westward towards Swansea, just as the TVR, the Taff Vale Railway, linked Aberdare towards Cardiff and south and the east, and the docks, of course, in those areas.
Opposite the TVR's low-level station stands the Market Hall, the location of blood, sweat and tears over the years. Head along Duke Street, between the bus station and market, and turn left onto the pedestrianised Market Street. Listen to track 2, outside the main entrance to Market Hall. Track 2, the Market Hall. Can you see the blue plaque above the original entrance of the Market Hall? Aberdare, during its boom years, was considered a centre of Welsh culture. Indeed, the first national Eisteddfod of the modern era was held here in 1861.
The Eisteddfod is really a medieval institution, and it was the focus of poetic and musical competitions back as far as the late 12th century. By the 17th and 18th century, the Eisteddfod movement had died out. By the 19th century, it was something really that lent itself to this idea of popular culture and the momentum behind it. Because, of course, we're talking about an age that's pre-television and pre-computer. So it was based on people doing things for themselves and in competition with each other. That was timely in the mid-19th century. And there was a movement to re-establish the National Eisteddfod.
As David Leslie Davis adds, the original venue, a great pavilion in what is now Aberdare Park, was destroyed just days before the event.
Unfortunately, there was a huge storm, a tempest, with literally two or three days before, thousands of people were arriving from all over Wales, and panic, of course, broke out. And one of the local coal owners, who was a major figure, ordered all his men in the collieries to down tools, cease work, and to turn up at the Market Hall to adapt it, literally within 2 days, by putting in staging, flooring, deco and lighting and so on. That would allow the festival to proceed.
In 1915, 11 years after a fire devastated the symmetrical appearance of this building, MP Keir Hardie was reputedly shot at whilst campaigning against the First World War. More on that story later.
The Market Hall also at one time contained an assembly room and a small theatre. Next to the Market Hall is an open space called the Market Yard, And a gentleman named William Hagger, who was a pioneer of the Welsh film industry, set up a mobile cinema on the site. He made films in the area with his family in the Aberdare Park. And eventually, when the business became popular and successful, he built a fine cinema opposite called Hagger's Cozy with a K, Cozy Hall. That building now stands in his Ladbrokes betting shop. If you look up onto the extension of the market, there is a plaque commemorating William Hagger and his works.
Continue along Market Street until you reach its junction with Cardiff Street. Cross over the road at the pedestrian traffic lights and turn right. Listen to track 3 as you approach the junction with Victoria Square. Track 3, Victoria Square.
The town has a very fine cenotaph, which was erected in 1923 and was opened with great ceremony. It's in the style of the cenotaph in Whitehall in London, and there is a myth that there are only two cenotaphs in the country. There are other cenotaphs dotted around the country. There's certainly one in Swansea. The word cenotaph actually means an empty tomb. It's a Greek word.
Well, the centre of Aberdare is one of the most attractive, I think, town centres in valley towns, with what is dominantly a Victorian character to it. And nowhere is that more evident than in what is now called Victoria Square and what was firstly known as Commercial Place. Where the cenotaph now stands, there was, in 1897, erected a bust in honour of Queen Victoria's Diamond Jubilee, although that has now disappeared. But the dominant feature of the streetscape and townscape there is the curving facade of a part of Victoria Square, the shape of which is dictated, really, by the contours of the hill on which St. Alban's stands. And it does create a very attractive facade, fronting what is, as I say, the main square, really, in the town.
We will explore the development of these buildings in more detail during track 5. Firstly, let us visit an old house for which another queen was to become acquainted. Head uphill along Victoria Square and take the first left into Boot Street. The first cottage on your right with a square plaque is your prompt to listen to track 4. Track 4, Queen Mary's Cottage.
In or about 1912, King George V was crowned, and he made a tour of the country following that, and he visited Aberdare on the 27th of June 1912. The royal car stopped in what was then Victoria Square, and he was persuaded to walk a little distance into Boot Street, where there's a typical workman's cottage that was set up by the owners, and the royal couple were invited in and given a cup of tea and some cake, and I'm told that the teacup and the cake is still in existence. After the royal visit, the owners of the house used to invite people in and charge them a nominal amount to have a look at the artefacts. On the facade of the cottage is a memorial plaque commemorating that event. Unfortunately, the cottage is no longer lived in, and in fact has been integrated into a local club, and it now forms part of the toilets.
Looking along the row of houses, you will notice how small they are. If you happen to be over 6 foot, you would have been considered a giant in the 1840s. Can you also see that Queen Mary's cottage wasn't intended to be the last in this row? Linking stones on the right-hand side of the cottage suggest they were meant to continue towards Victoria Square, or Commercial Place, as it would have been known then.
Boot Street is one of the earliest streets in Aberdare. There's an interesting photograph in one of the picture books published by the Society showing chickens wandering around in the street. They are typical working men's cottages of that period, probably the 1840s.
Return back to Victoria Square and turn left to head uphill once more. Listen to track 5 when you reach the statue that stands in front of the Black Lion Inn. Track 5, The Black Lion Inn. At this point, there is almost too much to say. Let's begin with a statue celebrating Gruffydd Rhys Jones, known to many simply as Caradog.
It's said that this is the only statue in Wales, and one of very few beyond Wales, to a conductor.
Caradog, a local man, worked as a blacksmith at the nearby Llwyd Coed Ironworks, but became interested in music at a young age and was a proficient violin player.
He was the moving force and conductor behind a choir called the South Wales Choral Union, known in Welsh as Y Côr Mawr, the Great Choir, which competed at the Crystal Palace in London in 1872 and 1873 in a major choral competition, which it won on both occasions against far more musically trained people, and it was seen as one of the first ways in which Wales, as it were, struck back psychologically and proved that it was not, in fact, backward or inward-looking or talentless. And Caradog was widely celebrated. And, of course, in 1920, by public subscription, his statue was erected to commemorate the triumphs of the Côr Mawr.
Behind Caradog stands the Black Lion Inn, one of the oldest buildings in the town centre. The narrow lane, Wynn Street, heading off to the left of this old coaching inn, used to be the main thoroughfare into town. It's difficult to imagine now. Before we follow this ancient parish road to the heart of the medieval village, we will turn our attention back, once again, to Victoria Square.
The original houses built along that square all had front gardens on them. Only two of those houses continue to have those, and they are the top two premises, as it were, next door to what is now a solicitor's office. Now, those two houses retain very much distinctive features of early Victorian, late Regency townhouses, rather restrained but symmetrical and smart, with front gardens in front of them. But, of course, with the growth of commerce, businesses extended their premises outward and took in those gardens, except in those two cases.
The Victorian Gothic Church of St Elvans dominates the skyline behind the two original houses. Jeff Evans provides further comment.
It's really a huge building, and its spire goes up to 180 feet in height. And I think that there was some friction between the Anglican Church and the Nonconformists, and I think that church was built deliberately to dominate the Nonconformist cause in the town. At the entrance to the church, there's a great block of stone. This was set up by the Cannon Valley History Society and commemorates James James, who lived in the town for a while and with his father, Evan James, wrote the Welsh National Anthem. It's interesting to note that James James is actually buried in Aberdare Cemetery.
Cross Wynn Street to the Black Lion and then carefully cross over Monk Street, which itself leads to the Deer Valley. Head along the left-hand side of High Street for about 50 metres before taking a diversion into the council office grounds on the left. Listen to track 6 in front of the bust celebrating James Keir Hardie. On the way, you will pass a car park on your right, which was once the site of the largest woolen mill in Wales. Track 6, The Rock Grounds. Unusually for a street of such a name, the High Street contains very few buildings.
All the early industrial and residential properties were cleared by the 1950s, leaving what is in effect quite an open sort of space.
Today, the council office stands upon Rock Grounds, once the home of the Rock Brewery.
The rock grounds, incidentally, just being a translation of the Welsh term, the graig, which means the rock, of course, in Welsh, and was the name by which the mountain along which Monk Street rises was known and is still known.
In front of the council office, we find the bust of James Keir Hardie.
Keir Hardie was the MP for Aberdare and Merthyr Tydfil. Those who were diehard socialists along with him took a very courageous stand against the First World War in the face of literally howling and band-playing mobs inside Aberdare's Market Hall in 1915. He was shouted down, booed, condemned as a traitor, and it is said someone even fired a pistol. Whether at him or just into the air isn't specified, but certainly it was the low point of Keir Hardie's career. To mark the 100th anniversary of the formation of the Parliamentary Labour Party, of which Keir Hardie was the first leader in 1906, that bust was placed there to commemorate his career as the effective founder of the Labour Party. The bust that we see is a cast of that which may be seen in the lobby of the House of Commons itself, and the Indian marble plinth on which it rests was a gift from the Indian High Commission to recall Keir Hardie's very progressive and very unusual for its time support for Gandhi and the Congress Party in the Home Rule movement for India, at a time when everyone else was very keen to keep the Union Jack and the Empire intact in those parts of the world.
Continue past Hardie's bust and look for the footpath on the right, which actually crosses the River Dee, one of the few places you can spot it running through the town. Head down the steps and turn left onto the High Street. Listen to track 7 by the ancient milepost found just before the library. Track 7, the Victorian milepost.
Just at the nearest point of the library, really, where there's a seating area, there, a very striking and distinctive Victorian milestone of the 1850s. Now, this originally stood in Commercial Place before the bust of Queen Victoria was put there. So this Victorian milestone, erected by the Board of Health, which was established in 1853-54, is a very important marker, if you like, of time and place, and continues to, as it were, locate Aberdare in a very obvious way, in that it quotes the mileage to Cardiff and to London and to Brecon and to Swansea and so on, and is a very interesting feature in itself.
When the iron industry was opened up in Aberdare in the early 1820s onwards, there was great amounts of work here and people flocked in from all parts of Wales. And the town just grew at an alarming rate. There was no provision whatsoever for drainage or proper roads in the district. And Aberdare was basically an open sewer. This is why in 1853, after the incidents of death from cholera and typhus, and typhoid, Thomas Webster Ramel was invited to come to Aberdare and listen to the evidence of townspeople into the appalling conditions here, and brought the town under the Public Health Act. As a consequence, the town was sewered and proper streets were laid down and street lighting, and we had gas works and adequate water supplies.
Thomas Webster Ramel was an engineer working for the Metropolitan Board of Health, who was a close friend of Henry Austin, son-in-law of Charles Dickens. Head just a little further along High Street and turn left into the large open area. Listen to track 8 outside the main entrance of the library. Track 8, the Old Market Hall.
There was a gentry family here called the Matthew family who owned most of the land in the area. They had a very large house in Aberaman called Aberaman House. And in the 1700s, Eleanor Matthew, the wife of one of the Matthew family, endowed almshouses for pauper women. And that building stood on the site of the present library.
When you stand on the steps of Aberdare Library entrance and you look immediately opposite, you'll see the side of a large building. That was the town's first market hall, as David Leslie Davis explains.
The original market hall was a single-storey building with arcading, that is to say, open arching at ground level, which is still a feature of the building now, although, of course, the open arching has been filled in to create round-headed window frames, as it were. Stalls would have been located, of course, at that ground floor level, towards which people would have approached through these open arches. In 1853, a new market hall befitting the new burgeoning coalfield town that Aberdare was becoming was built and opened, and that's the attractive building we see today in Market Street. And the old market hall became the location of what was the first instrument of local government in the area, and that was the creation of a Board of Health.
The Board of Health, as you will recall, was formed to sort out the dire living conditions that residents were experiencing. They extended the building upwards to create a second story. Next, the Board of Education took over the building, followed by the Aberdare Urban District Council, which was formed in 1896. They added yet another floor.
Another interesting feature of the town, of course, is this rather, well, some might say grandiose, others might say pompous structure known as the Constitutional Club, topped by a very ornate wrought iron crown to signify the imperial crown of Queen Victoria, you know. Now, that was erected again at the time of Queen Victoria's Diamond Jubilee, when this enthusiasm for empire was at its heyday. Interestingly, and opposite it, are some of the more elegant and restrained buildings of the town centre, in particular two nonconformist chapels, which are built along the lines of Greek temples.
These chapels are Green Street Methodist Chapel, to the left of the old Market Hall, and the Siloa Chapel, further left still. We are going to head between these two fine buildings, and to the right of the less architecturally pleasing Crown Building. Listen to track 9 outside St John the Baptist Church, which will soon come into view straight ahead of you. Track 9, St John the Baptist Church. The jewel in the crown of Aberdare is probably the parish church of St John the Baptist, which dates from around 1200. It has a Norman-derived dedication. Whereas most ancient churches in South Wales have Celtic dedications, this one has a dedication of the Continental Church, probably linked to the time of the Crusades.
It's a very small church, seats about 200 people, which reflects the original population of Aberdare. A farming community where people would have come down into the church on a Sunday morning on their horses from outlying farms. It's a very fine churchyard, which has a number of very imposing monuments. I've mentioned the Matthew family of Aberaman, who endowed the almshouses. The bell, which dates from the 1600s, was given by William Matthew of that family. It's unfortunately not rung today.
This was the heart of the medieval village, known locally as Green Vach, meaning Little Green. Next to the church, this village green would have provided the only open area in what was a warren of narrow lanes bordered with tiny cottages and inns. At this point, you may like to make a 10-minute detour to the Cynon Valley Museum. Please look at the map for directions. It has a wonderful array of exhibits and stands on the site of the former Gadlys Ironworks, the third ironworks to be founded in Aberdare. A blue plaque, erected in 2009, can be found to the left of the museum entrance.
If you walk behind the museum buildings, you can see the four furnaces. Originally there was one furnace, and then three more were added. They're in very, very fine state of repair and preservation. The iron was used locally and was exported. near the site of the ironworks is a tin plate works, and that was a spin-off from the manufacture of iron.
Retrace your steps back to the library and cross over High Street via the pedestrian traffic lights onto Cannon Street. Head along the right-hand side of the Constitutional Club and listen to track 10 at the junction with Wetherill Street. Track 10, The Temperance Hall. The building on your left is the fine Trinity Presbyterian Church of Wales, built in 1867 at a cost of £300. Across Wetherill Street, you will notice a blue plaque marking what was Temperance Hall.
The building, which now houses the Palladium Bingo Club, was built in 1858 as the town's Temperance Hall. It was built by the National Temperance Society in an attempt to keep people off the streets and out of the pubs of Aberdare, of which there were many, and we'll have a word about that later on. It was built as a theatre and a public meeting place. It holds 1,500 people and put on all sorts of shows, minstrel shows. Also, plays were performed there and freak shows, operas. In fact, the Welsh opera Blodwyn was written by Joseph Parry, and he actually conducted the second performance of it at the Temperance Hall in Aberdare. In 1895, it ceased being the Temperance Hall and became the New Theatre and Hippodrome. And in 1918, it became a cinema.
Continue along Cannon Street, observing the fine architecture on the upper stories of the shops, and keep an eye to your right.
The present-day Halifax Bank was the headquarters of an important newspaper, Y Gwladgarwr, The Patriot. This was a paper that ran throughout South Wales and beyond that too.
Aberdare was once called the Athens of Wales, owing to the large number of printers in the town. There were two extraordinary phases between 1854 and 1865, and 1903 and 1911, when a new press was established, on average, every 2 years. Bear left along the pedestrianised Commercial Street as you reach the traffic lights. Halfway down this road, on your right, you will see the old sign for the Bush Inn. You're prompt to listen to track 11. Track 11, The Bush Inn.
You'll see in Commercial Street an existing public house sign in plasterwork on the wall. The name of the hotel or the public house was the Bush Hotel, and this was one of 16 public houses that existed in this street in the 1850s. Hence the need for a temperance hall to get the people out of these pubs and into some entertainment.
It is said that in 1872, there were another 40 alehouses in Cardiff Road, with at least 273 alehouses in the area from Hirwaun to Abercwmboi. As we complete the final leg of our walk by continuing down Commercial Street and turning right onto Duke Street to return to our starting point, David Leslie Davis summarises what is special about Aberdare.
More than anything else, what you'll find in Aberdare is the best-preserved Victorian town centre in the South Wales cornfield. It's almost uniform, it's almost intact, and Aberdare, by and large, has been quite lucky to escape the sort of wholesale demolition that has destroyed the character of other valleys towns, which have lost so much of that character now.